Strange News Daily is a production of iHeartMedia.
In a world full of bizarre events, unsolved mysteries, and a billion stories from all corners of the globe, some news gets lost in the shuffle. This is your gateway to the stories on the fringe of the mainstream map. These are your dispatches in the dark. I'm Ben Bolin, and this is the Strange News Daily. Our first story today takes place right here in the state of Georgia, where our show is based. Do you remember your first driving test? For a lot of people, this was a nerve-wracking experience. Parallel parking still fills plenty of veteran drivers with anxiety, and parents teaching their kids to drive experience a whole other level of worry. Yet, still, learning to drive is a tremendous rite of passage. There's nothing quite like the profound sense of freedom you experience that first time you hop behind the wheel. You might think kids aren't able to get licenses due to the ongoing pandemic. But as Superchib over on Twitter informed us, licenses are still being issued without the kids ever taking a road test. It's true. Georgia is temporarily allowing all 16-year-old applicants to get a license without taking the road test requirement. As you might imagine, this has plenty of people, observers, parents, and drivers alike, concerned. The move by Georgia Governor Brian Kemp suspends the in-person road test for an estimated 30,000 teens waiting to upgrade from their learner's permit. According to Spencer Moore, commissioner of the state's Department of Driver Services, this move allows the driver to move to that next phase without having to take the road test. Instead, teens can obtain their full license online with one important catch. According to the commissioner of the DDS, the applicants must provide a written statement attesting that they have completed nearly 40 hours of supervised training with the help of either an adult or a professional instructor. And despite the concerns, tons of people have already successfully applied. Moore noted that within 1 hour alone, 730 teens upgraded through the website. This website, by the way, has about an 80% pass rate. In fact, most people get their licenses on the first try. Of course, this remains a somewhat controversial move. Even some teenagers are against it. 15-year-old Tanner Wiggins says he doesn't think young drivers should be on the road without that in-person road test, saying, "As a driver, I want to know for myself that I'm ready to be on the road too." What do you think, folks? Should young drivers be able to hop behind the wheel without an actual road test? My favorite part of this story, by the way, comes from a mother named Jen Hancock, who asks, if we have a stay-at-home order, where do these 16-year-olds need to drive? Jen, I hate to say it, but you make a great and pretty amusing point. Our second story today is one our research guru, Sam Teagarden, hipped me to. Sam likes to call this one shrimp sabotage. Over at the Yangjiang nuclear power station in Guangdong Province, China, authorities have had to shut down the 6 power-generating units of the complex due to attacks of masses of shrimp. Well, maybe attack is a strong word here. Enormous shoals of these tiny krill-like shrimp, measuring just a few centimeters long, have repeatedly flooded the seawater diversion channel and the water pumping stations of the complex. This first shrimp sabotage occurred on March 24th, causing one of the power-generating units to go into automatic safe shutdown. The other 5 continued running at 80% capacity. After some intense cleaning, the shutdown unit was able to resume operation the next day. For a little while, at least. You see, later that same day, you have to respect the shrimp's tenacity here, another large group of shoals infiltrated the pumping station. This time, 4 units were shut down automatically. The station controllers shut off the other 2 units in the interest of safety. This event, is rated a level 1 on the International Nuclear and Radiological Event Scale. That's pretty good. It means that it was an anomaly that had no safety or health concerns. For comparison, only two nuclear events have ever been rated at the top of the scale as level 7 major accidents. Those are, of course, the Chernobyl disaster in 1986 and Fukushima in 2011. China's Nuclear Regulatory Agency says the situation is now under control. Pan Chen, the head and chair professor of nuclear engineering at City University of Hong Kong — Hong Kong, by the way, is about 230 kilometers or 146 miles from the plant — says that this event wasn't actually a surprise. Pan notes, "This incident is not unexpected. The power plant uses seawater as a coolant for the condenser, and occasionally aquatic mammals may get too close to the intake and cause such incidents." And the weirdest part? This isn't the first time this has happened. Luke Binglam, chairman of the Hong Kong Nuclear Society, stated, "Similar events have occurred at nuclear power plants using seawater as a coolant for their power-generating units, including non-nuclear units, throughout the world, including China." China's nuclear safety regulator additionally said it asked all nuclear power station operators to use marine life detection systems in light of this and similar incidents. But Pan raised concerns that these shrimp might be just too small to be detected by these systems. "We will continue to keep an eye on these shrimp invaders, and should they succeed in permanently shutting down the plant, we assure you we will update with any forthcoming manifestos or lists of demands on their part." Our third story for today takes us back in time to a surprisingly progressive practice. Recycling, as it turns out, is far from some newfangled environmental phenomenon. New excavations reveal that ancient Romans may have, in fact, invented recycling, and it turns out they were pretty great at it. Professor Allison Emerson, an American academic who is part of a large team working at Pompeii, said trash was piled up along almost the entire external wall on the city's north side. Some of these mounds were several feet high, and they had bits of ceramic and plaster inside them. These bits could be repurposed to be used as construction materials. The mounds had previously been thought to have been formed when an earthquake struck the city about 17 years before the infamous volcanic eruption. Most of these mounds were cleared in the mid-1900s, but some are still being discovered. Scientific analysis has now traced some of the trash from the city sites to suburban deposits, the equivalent of modern landfills, and then back to the city, where the material was incorporated into buildings, like earth floors. Emerson's team found that part of the city was actually built out of trash. The piles outside the walls weren't material that was dumped to get rid of it. They were outside of the walls to be collected and sorted to be resold inside the walls of the city. Pompeii was a happening place, pre-eruption at least. The architecture was top-notch, including villas, public buildings, open squares, shops, brothels, bathhouses. There was even an amphitheater that could seat up to 20,000 people for bloody displays and gladiatorial games. The ancient tragedy of the volcanic eruption has made Pompeii a uniquely preserved city. Under the hardened layers of ash and pumice and rock and time, you can find all sorts of evidence of day-to-day life, including things like a preserved loaf of bread and one particular individual preserved in the middle of an intimate experience. We're a family show, so I won't spoil this on air, but write to me at Twitter if you would like to know more about that one. Anyhow, here's how Emerson discovered this case of bygone recycling. Her team used soil samples to trace the movement of trash across the city. Emerson said, "The soil that we excavate differs based on where the garbage was originally left, and that garbage dumped in places like latrines or cesspits leaves behind a rich organic soil. In contrast, she continues, waste that accumulated over time on the streets or in mounds outside the city results in a much sandier soil. This difference in soil allows us to see whether the garbage had been generated in the place where it was found or gathered from somewhere else to be reused and recycled. And it turns out, our cities in the modern day still have a lot to learn from Pompeii. Emerson notes, modern approaches to waste management focus on removing rubbish from our daily lives. She says, for the most part, we don't care what happens to our trash as long as it's taken away. What I found in Pompeii is an entirely different priority, that waste was being collected and sorted for recycling. The Pompeians, says Emerson, lived much closer to their garbage than most of us would find acceptable, not because the city lacked infrastructure and they didn't bother to manage trash, but because their systems of urban management were organized around different principles. This point has relevance for the modern garbage crisis. The countries that most effectively manage their waste have applied a version of the ancient model, prioritizing commodification rather than simple removal. Regardless of space and time, it seems we humans are still trying to figure out solutions to the same age-old problems. That's all for now. We've been asking you to chime in with suggestions for stories you think your fellow listeners should know about, for terrible jokes, for your own personal experiences with COVID-19. Let us know. Tag hashtag Strange Daily on Twitter or reach out to me directly. I'm at Ben Bolin HSW on Twitter or at Ben Bolin on Instagram. Thanks as always to our super producer, Dylan Fagan. Listeners, by the way, you might notice that Dylan switches up and tweaks the music in different episodes. So give it a listen and let us know your favorite Easter eggs there. And thanks as well to our research associate, Sam Shrimp Sabotage Teagarden. And most importantly, thanks to you. I'm Ben Bolin. We'll see you tomorrow. Until then, stay strange.